Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Glad to have you along today as we take a look at personal computers. Maybe we can talk about computer gifts, talk about end-of-the-year purchases. We can certainly talk about computer issues and software problems with Peter Green of InfoStar of Madison. Visits us once a month, matter of fact, to help with your personal computer issues. And it's usually the first Monday of the month, isn't it, Pete?
Yep.
Always the first Monday of the month. Great to have you back, by the way. Thanks
Always
for
great.
Coming.
Always great, Larry.
So we got computer hardware and software. They seem to be popular gifts around the holidays. And for people in business, for themselves, they may want to make some purchases maybe before the end of the year for tax purposes, I would think. What are some of the items you expect will be pushed in advertising now in the next 6 weeks or so? And will there be some good deals to be had?
Well, there's always good deals. It's where, you know, how do you find them?
Yeah.
Couple of resources that I like using, buy.com, Tiger Direct. You can subscribe to their email list and they'll send you daily announcements of, you know, specials that they have. You can also check their sites out and go to, you know, clearance items and specials of the day, specials of the week. They rank them in terms of where they were in sales and where they are now. Some of them have reviews. Some of them don't. So I like to read reviews and, you know, get some feedback on what people think about, you know, the items that I'm looking at. Solid-state hard drives are, you know, they're coming down in cost. Great way to speed up your computer, improve reliability. They're not perfect, you know. Again, yep. They're all appliances. They're all, you know, got something moving, yep. Not moving, but something going on with them that could cause them to hiccup. So always make sure you do backups. You know, another good gift would be, you know, a backup hard drive.
Yeah.
I would say at a minimum probably 500 gig or a half a terabyte, and those are probably in the, I'm going to guess somewhere in the $50 range. The hard drive backups have increased in size significantly, and, you know, you can add more for a lot less. You know, if you're in a home network environment, network-attached storage devices, you can buy the, if you want to call it the shell, and then add the hard drives.
Yeah.
So you might say, okay, son, I'm really concerned, or daughter, I'm really concerned about, you know, we've got all these things going on in our house. We've got photos, we got music, we got movies, we got schoolwork and all this, and how are you backing it up? So you attach one of these network-attached storage devices to your router or switch, and then you say, okay, well, how much hard drive space? Well, you got to get the unit by itself without the hard drives, and then just kind of get together and say, well, how much are we really backing up? And then pick how much of a hard drive you want and add that separately at a later time. So kind of like get the backup stuff going,
right?
But not fully commit to it. So that D-Link makes some really inexpensive products to do that.
Cool.
And they're also good for businesses as well. You know, online backup services, you know, make subscribing to that could be a gift.
Well, there's lots of possibilities.
Yeah, what I did was on, on my tips page. So if you go to infostar.com, then click on tips on the left-hand side and go to tip number 22, what I did was I updated that list, which includes a whole bunch of online stores, and in some cases I remarked, use the word brick, that they have a retail store. So keep in mind, if you're going to, you know, shop locally, you could shop online, look for what you want, go to the store, and there's sales tax involved whether or not you buy it through the store or if you buy it online, because they have a bricks and mortar store in the state. The other thing is I listed a bunch of review sites, and then I put little stars next to the ones that I like to use.
Mm-hmm.
So you can go to just review sources, you know, resources that do reviews and give you their feedback, editor, you know, what the editors like or their team of people liked about it. Or you can check some of them out for independent, you know, personal reviews by people that have posted.
Makes good sense. Don in Madison has a question for you. Let's go there. Hi, Don. Thank you for calling.
How are you today?
Great.
Hi. Greetings to both you and Peter. I had a computer once, but I gave it away because I couldn't see it anymore. My vision is severely limited, and my other daughter says that I should buy a laptop that I can enlarge the print on at will so that I can see it better. I'm just wondering what Peter thinks about that for a person that doesn't see very well.
Well, you can control the font size that's used on the desktop. You could also probably speech enable, the operating system so that in a sense, if you can't really see what's there, you could have it talk to you.
Yeah.
And you could also use, there's a popular product called Dragon Speak that, you can dictate to the computer.
Uh-huh.
And it's pretty good about, being able to type what you say. You basically train it. And then, you can review it and print it out or do emails.
Well, are there laptops that do enlarge, though, at will, as you want it to?
There's actually, if you want to call it a shortcut to using almost like the scroll. So you could buy an independent scroll wheel to use with the laptop, which might make it easier. But there are keyboard and slide pad combinations that allow you to scroll enlarge to your heart's content.
Okay.
Or make it smaller because it's too big.
Yeah.
The reverse.
A lot of people have used the iPad, depending on, with vision problems, because it's so easy to enlarge.
That might be a good solution,
too. That is really simple to enlarge.
Yeah.
An iPad.
Yeah.
You might want to take a look at one at least.
Do they have those at Best Buy?
I believe so.
I would think probably, yeah.
Yeah. I think they've gotten out there enough in the retail marketplace.
Literally, you're putting your thumb and your finger on and kind of spreading them apart, and that instantly makes the type.
Yeah, the important thing to realize when you're looking at an iPad is the option of whether or not to invest in the online internet access.
Uh-huh.
If you have no hookup in your home and that's the only thing that you're going to use, it would probably be a lot easier to just have that enabled to hook up to the internet, and that's going to be a monthly service fee.
Sure.
If you have other systems in your house and you have what's called a router with Wi-Fi, wireless networking.
I think we have this where I live.
Okay. Then you can get one without the online service, and then basically someone would have to help you set it up so that your iPad could tap into the Wi-Fi. And you could get onto the internet that way.
Uh-huh.
Which would save you $30 a month?
Yeah.
Because I think that's about what they charge at a minimum for the online service.
Yep.
Well, thank you very much, Peter, and your assistant there.
You're welcome.
Thanks a lot for
Good
calling.
Luck.
I'm Larry Mueller, by the way, and my guest today is Peter Green of InfoStar. com. Great to have him along. Don, thank you so much for calling. Actually, we had a kind of a sad Facebook comment from Jerry, sad in a way, because he said the prices of hard drives have nearly doubled in the last week. They say the flooding in Asia has knocked out some major suppliers and manufacturers, so suddenly the hard drive prices took a big hit.
Wow. Yeah, that's one thing that is a constant is Mother Nature out there, and she can play wreck havoc on all the best laid plans of mice and men, including things like affecting gasoline supplies and supplies of precious metals and everything else. So, that's unfortunate. You might, if you still hunt now, you might, it depends on what the long-term forecast is.
Yeah.
It's, if you look at, what the price of coffee is, or they talk about peanut butter or whatever, if you still check some of the online sources, maybe they haven't caught up to the game plan yet, and there might still be some deals out there.
Joe in Racine, we're on to you now. Hi, Joe. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. One comment and then a couple of questions. First of all, I do have a copy of the Dragon program, number 9.
Okay.
The previous caller asked about that. It does work. I haven't used it that much, and I think it's now 11.5 is the update. But I do believe that it's something that I do need to get more involved in. I own number 9 and never bothered to update it. But I think it actually is pretty good, and I'd recommend that for others as well. It does speed things up. Second thing is just a quick question. What's your opinion of the spinning hard drives? Are they going to be around for a while, or is it all going to be solid state going forward? And then I've got another question on CCleaner.
Well, if you look at the – that's a good question is related to spinning. You know, the solid state hard drives, no moving parts. You don't have to defrag them. They even tell you that, you know, that's not good for the drive, so no more defragmentation. But, you know, in terms of price and capacity.
Ways to go yet.
Yeah, a 120 gig solid state drive, you know, is in, depending upon the manufacturer and the speed throughput, you're looking at, you know, $100 to $200. And you compare that to buying a spinning drive at 7,200 RPM, which would be considered high performance, you know, and you're looking at probably, you know, 2 terabytes or more for that price. So that's a pretty significant, you know, storage capacity amount in terms of difference of probably, you know, between 10 to 20 to 1. But they keep getting bigger, and they keep getting faster. So they're attractive in terms of depending upon what you do. Now, if you're doing a lot of photos, a lot of video, a lot of audio, you're going to want the higher capacity storage.
Yeah.
Because
no doubt about it.
You just get a lot more room. But if you're doing something where you have an application where it's accounting-based or maybe you're editing the audio, the video, or desktop publishing, and you've got these big files, you can have the operating system, the application loaded, and still work on your, you know, what you're doing with the application, and you're going to get a lot better performance. But your storage, you're going to want to, you know, you move it towards the spinning drive. So I think they're going to coexist for a while. But, you know, Moore's Law in terms of how technology changes, there might be some brilliant person that's at one of our universities that comes up with a phenomenal way of storing things and does away with spinning, you know, tomorrow.
Generally. Yeah.
Okay. Another quick question on CCleaner.
Mm-hmm.
I actually called you a couple months ago, and I did download the programs, and okay. I do use them.
Mm-hmm.
And are you... Is it prudent to run CCleaner maybe once a week or less often, more often?
Yeah, you know, I probably run it when I feel like my computer's, you know, kind of lagging.
But is once a week, does that seem too frequent? Or is there any problems with, are there any problems running it, you know, let's say once a day? Or is there some...
I think once a day would probably be overdoing it. I haven't experienced any problems with it. That's not to say that someone else could have a problem with it. You know, every system is different. I've had 2 systems side by side built at the same time. They still behave differently,
yeah.
Even though they're spec'd out and you kind of like what's going on. And it's hard to tell what the differences are. But with CCleaner, you know, once a week should be fine. But, you know, again, what are you doing with your system? If you're working with a lot of large files, a lot of applications in and out of web browsing and email, and you've got a lot of those things going on, then the tenant, and you've got a spinning hard drive, you're creating a lot of temporary use on that drive, so it'll probably improve performance, or maybe, you know, because you do it once a week, you just get used to how well it works.
Yeah.
Personally, for me, you know, I just look at it in terms of how the system's performing, and if I, you know, it's kind of hiccuping, I'm like, okay, it's time to do some maintenance on it.
There you go. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. You can join in, too, at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@WPR.org or go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show, and you can post a question or comment there. For our guest today, Peter Green of Infostar.com, I'm Larry Mueller, Judith Sears-Poisson, our producer on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Peter Green, our guest today as we talk your personal computer. And Gary and Ripon, you are next. Hi, Gary. Thank you for calling.
Hello. I have a question about email accounts.
Okay.
I presently have a Yahoo account I'm becoming not so fond of anymore. I believe I heard you say at one point in the past that there are non-web-based email accounts you can get. If so, is there some you recommend?
Well, web-based is stuff like typically Yahoo, Hotmail, Google Gmail.
Gmail, yeah.
But you can actually turn, like, and I'm sure you can do that with Yahoo, and I know you can do it with Google, is you could actually set it up so that it basically downloads to your system. So you're importing the messages to your desktop.
How would I do that?
There are settings to set up your whatever email you're using on your computer. Google has become very popular, and they have instructions there for, you know, how to set it up
so if I do that, then it actually stores the email in my computer as opposed to...
Right. You can, and there are settings where you can have it delete the messages online when you download them.
Okay.
So
if I end up doing that and I get it to store them in my computer, when I delete, does it mean it actually is deleted then?
Or? That's correct. Yep.
It isn't stored somewhere else for 50,
that's right.
50 years.
Okay. Yep. Now, the other thing, here's a little trick, if you want, where let's say you want your, and you, some people get frustrated where they, you know, move their email and then you got to let people know and stuff like that, is you could actually come up with a domain name, and it could be your name, your full name with your middle initial. It could be your last name spelled backwards. It could be whatever you want. So you go and you sign up your domain name, and it costs you, let's say, plus or minus $15 a year. You could also just simply set up an email account for that domain name. And some of the web hosting companies out there, if you sign up the domain name through them, will give you some of this stuff for free. So it may cost you, you know, it could vary from $15 for the domain name to, you know, the email service might cost you maybe $1 a month or $3 a month. Depends on, there's so many different hosting companies out there and the gimmicks they have to get you in as a customer. But basically you own it. It's yours. You know, so it's whatever you want to call it, you know, so it's John Smith or Jane Smith at this domain name that you've come up with, .com or .net or whatever, and you own that whole setup and just renew it each year.
Oh, I see.
So, and it's the same thing, you know,
yeah.
All the emails are downloaded to your system, and typically the setting is that if you download the emails, once they're downloaded from the online post office, they're gone, unless you tell it to keep it.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Thank you.
Yep.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. We've got a Facebook question from Sharon. Uh-oh. I dropped my 500-gigabyte MyBook external storage drive on the floor last year, and now I can't get any information off of it. I had a friend with knowledge with hardware and software take it apart and look at it. She said the arm is stuck and beyond what she is comfortable with working with. Where is the best place to bring or send this to retrieve my data? I have 10 years of family photos stored on it. Help!
Let's see. One suggestion would be to take the hard drive out and see if you can hook it up to another unit to get, you know, to power it and see if it'll work that way. if something like that fails, there are data recovery or disaster data recovery services out there. I think OnTrack is one that's popular, but you could probably do a Google search and see what your options are. You may even come up with some local companies that can work with that. I know one of the interesting things I had happen with me is we had a server that we had to power off because of power maintenance in our office, and it happened around Labor Day a number of years ago. And what was interesting was because we shut it off and it had been on for so long, the bearing seized in the hard drive. So the tech came out. And this is a mini computer system, but it's still the same technology. He said, I'll do this once and only once. And he took the drive out and spun it on the concrete floor. And he said, if this works, you know, it'll free him up. And he said, but I'm not going to sit here and do this all afternoon. And it worked. Yeah. So, you know, maybe spinning it on a hard surface, you know, carefully. If you're going to do it on a table, just be prepared to catch it before it hits the floor again.
Oh,
but I wish you good luck in trying to recover.
Glenn in Milwaukee, on to you now. Hi, Glenn.
I have got a question on DSL.
Okay.
I'd like to stream video in high def. And I'm wondering what is the minimum download speed that I would need for that?
Boy, I don't know if DSL can handle that. Streaming HD, I know the people that I personally don't do it, but I know the people that do it have a really nice, fast broadband hookup, and they're typically using the higher end of the cable hookups. I don't know where you live in terms of what your options are for...
In Milwaukee, and I'm stuck either with cable.
Okay. So you probably, I think, Roadrunner services that area. You know, you could probably... There's a resource out there called DSL Reports. So it's DSLReports.com.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure it's .com, but it could be .net. But anyhow, you know, if you do a search on DSL Reports, there's probably an online forum that I'm sure there are some discussions about, you know, streaming HD. But the HD, you know, just to give you an example of HD and satellite, I remember when Dish Network started offering HD 1080 movies, you know, I was all excited about it, and then they said you need to do this overnight. And I was like, what?
Yeah.
So if that gives you any idea in terms of you know, what's necessary to download an HD movie or video, It's a lot of bandwidth.
Yeah, that's for sure.
And I don't think DSL can cut it unless you've got, you know, some super DSL service.
Thanks, Glenn. Gary in Fitchburg, it is your turn. Hi, Gary.
Hi. Just wondering, I noticed just a plethora of irritating pop-ups. And I think three or four of them will come up on a site, and then my computer slows down, and I hate those things. Then I also noticed when I go to another site and switch, you know, to another area in my browser, I see this on the bottom that double-click comes up and something else. It's like it's going through and something's grabbing my data or my information. Is there anything that software I can get that will kill these pop-ups and keep them from happening? And keep this other crazy stuff from installing on my system?
Yeah, one of the things you can do is in your browser, there's typically an option or a setting to block pop-ups.
I know, but it doesn't work.
Okay. The other thing that you can do, there's a program called Malware Bytes that I've had pretty good luck with that will get rid of those programs that are trying to keep popping up on your system.
Malware Bytes?
Yep.
I run that Malware Bytes thing, but at the end of it, it says no malicious files were found. Hmm. But does it still help with things, or is it just not doing what you think it's doing?
What are you using for antivirus? Because those also have...
I'm using the free one. I forget what the name of it is now. It's one of the free ones.
AVG?
Yeah.
Okay.
Avast, yeah.
Yep. What you may want to try doing is, or you said Avast is what you're using? Okay.
Yeah.
I've run some of them, concurrently, at the same time. It's a possibility to just download another one and see if, for whatever reason, one of them's not picking up on, stuff that's annoying to you. The other thing is to, how many browsers do you have on your system?
Well, the only one I use is Netscape.
Okay. You may want to try and download Google Chrome.
Okay.
And then try and run your other programs and use Chrome and see if you have the same, effect.
Okay.
Because there may be something on your system that is lingering, and if you can get to it through maybe some of the resources I put up on my Virus Info Center page allow you to do online scans.
Yes.
Like Panda. I think Trend Micro has got House Calls. And you can use some of those and see if going through another browser you're able to, basically disinfect your system. Because it sounds like something... It has managed to get in your system, and it just needs to have something else attack it, go after it.
Try something different, yeah. There you go, Gary. Thank you.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah, yep. Appreciate the call.
The other thing is you may want to take a closer look at what's in your startup, and some of these annoying things get into your startup, and they sit in your system tray, but you don't even realize that they're there. And depending upon which version of Windows you're using, if you type in msconfig, so msconfig, and hit enter, you'll go to where your startup is. You'll see a startup tab. And just make note of all the different things that have checkboxes next to them. And those are the ones that are running. And what I've seen happen is sometimes when something feels like it's the real vicious ones will take over your system, and if you try to get rid of them, they will morph. And I've got one of my last tips on my tips page is how to identify what's running in memory but is hidden.
Yeah.
So then you can locate where the program is on your system. And then Malware Bytes has what's called a file assassin. It's a tool that allows you to go to the place on your hard drive where that file is located. And even though it's hidden to you, because you could try and find it, but you can't actually find it, but it's there. So you use this file assassin and you actually delete it, remove it from your system. So these malware programs and viruses... if they feel like they're threatened or they're being attacked to be removed, they actually morph and trigger a program to change
Make
and become something else.
Yeah.
So that last tip I have on my tips page goes over how to figure that out as well.
I got an email from Ron in Oshkosh. You had advised against defragging the hard disk.
That's only with solid state drives.
Just the
solid state. Yep.
Otherwise, you should be doing it.
Right. Yep. Solid-state drives, they actually, what kind of bothers me about this industry is when they say don't defrag solid-state drives, How does the user know that unless they read all the fine print or it says it in great big letters? So to me, when you open up the package, it should have like this red label on it that says, do not do this. But we don't have any industry oversight.
Yeah.
So they just do that. And then it's buyer beware unless you hear about, do this or don't do that. So it's only with solid state hard drives that you don't defrag.
Joya in Fitchburg, on to you now. Hi, Joya.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I got two questions. I wanted his take. I just read somewhere recently that there's a instrument called UMA, OOMA, which you connect with the internet and your telephone, and then you can get rid of the telephone. You just you don't get rid of the telephone itself, but get rid of the telephone company whom you subscribe. You just pay the local taxes and the federal taxes and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know anything about it? I wanted your opinion about it.
Nope, never heard about it. Sounds interesting.
The Best Buy is selling it, I know.
Uh-huh.
And it goes through the internet. But my question was how much power you need for that.
Yeah, I would a new product like that, I would probably go to some of the tech review sites like CNET.com and ZDNet reviews, and I'm sure if it's been out for even 3 months that there's some online discussion about, is this thing for real? And I know Magic Jack and, that got popular real fast and, get rid of your second line and all this other stuff. But there are certain, and I don't even remember because one time I looked at something like that and I was like, it's not going to work for me because there were certain red flags that came up based on how I would use it. That it wasn't something that would work for me, but it could work very well for somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I would do is I would go to some of these review sites or do a search and see what opinions are on, going on about that. And then also, like you said, Best Buy sells it. Best Buy posts user reviews, and there are other sites.
That's
right. I'm sure there are other sites that are selling it as well, and you can look at the reviews and see what people are saying about it as well.
And thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call, Joya. Tom in Madison, we'll give you a chance now. Hi, Tom. Thank you for calling.
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
Hi.
I'm running an older Dell desktop computer. We use it for our business. Our business is all online, so we get a lot of stuff from customers. Right now, it's running this privacy protection program, appears to be a virus of some kind, and it won't let me do anything. Basically, I can open a folder, but I can't open any application, any software.
Yep.
Can't get online.
How do you deal with it?
How do I deal with it?
That is your question, is how to deal with it.
If you go to my tips page, you have to go through another system, obviously.
Yep.
But that very last tip that I posted that has to deal with how to get rid of really annoying programs like what you're dealing with, those are all the tools that I used. It took me hours to figure this out. But basically what's going on is there's a program running in memory when your system starts up that is hidden.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe the companies, I don't remember all of them, but I think Nuber is one of the programs I refer to, and there's a name.
How do you spell that?
If you go to the tips page, it's all the links and everything's documented there.
Okay.
So it's at infostar.com.
Yep. So you have to download the programs and run them on the system, and you'll say, hey, well, how can I do that? Well, you can either try doing it through what I mentioned in the tips, or the only other alternative you have is to take that drive out of that computer, attach it as a secondary drive in another system that has a similar version of the operating system to disinfect it.
Okay.
Because the program that's running has an identity. Everything has an identity. No matter what, you know, the only way something can run as an application on a computer, and this is an app, what you have is an application that's annoying and getting in the way and frustrating you. It has to have an identity, and it can be hidden. So there are applications out there that can identify this hidden identity to you, and then where is it located on your system, and then you have to remove it or disable it.
Okay.
So that's the concept, is identify and disable it. But how can you identify something you can't see?
Right.
So the tools are out there to identify something that you can't see, and then there are other tools out there to help you remove them. Like I mentioned, one is called Spy Assassin. And all of those are done in that tips without buying anything.
Yeah, it's not going to cost you anything.
Yeah.
Thank you. Good
and I
luck.
I know how frustrating it can be, and that's why I spend hours. I like, there got to be a way to get rid of these things.
And you've got it in tip 22.
Tip 22 is the shopping.
That's the shopping
one.
Sorry.
The very last one. It's like 38 or 39.
Yeah, okay. It's in the 30s. That's right.
It's all the way to the very end. Yep.
All right. There you go, Tom. Yep. And Mark in Madison. Hi.
Hey. I was just calling as a follow-up to the caller just a little bit ago who had a question about the UMA phone system. And I've been using the UMA phone system for a little bit more than 2 years now.
Okay.
And it's terrific. It's the voice over internet protocol system.
Okay.
And I think I paid right around $200 or $250 for it, and never get another phone bill, and it works flawlessly.
So you're basically tapping into your internet hookup and running your doing voice over IP, which is internet protocol.
Yes.
And so you're just leveraging, and that's basically what, you know, a company like Roadrunner or Charter, you know, the cable companies are doing, is when they come in, they're setting up your internet to also do your phone line or phone service.
Yeah.
Yep.
And the way this UMA works is that I just took the basic, but with the basic, you get, you know, the phone service, the hardware, and then the phone service includes the caller ID and voicemail. I think they also offer a preferred package for, you know, $10 to $12 a month or something like that. But, you know, I was kind of aiming for the free aspect of it,
yep.
So I didn't go for the preferred.
Yeah. There are a couple of other comments that I have as related to this. One is, if your phone line or your internet goes down at your house, your phone line's out, but a lot of people these days have cell phones.
Right.
Okay. So that really shouldn't be much of an issue. And the other one is, in terms of people making long distance calls, you know, Skype has gained in popularity, and I know I've used it for overseas when my son was doing a study abroad, and it works great like that. But it depends on how you use things.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you use the phone a lot and you don't want to see recurring charges, you know, I don't know if these things have trials or not, and you can take them back if you don't like them, you know, stuff like that. But, you know, there are options out there. And, you know, it's great that, you know, you've been using it for, like you said, 2 years.
And
it works
bills.
Great for you, and no phone bills, you know.
It's a very good thing. Mark,
Thank
you very much for calling, Mark. Appreciate your call. Peter Green of InfoStar of Madison, our guest here, Larry Mueller on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. If you have a computer question, I hope you'll join in. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234, or email us at talk@wpr.org, or go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show, and you can post a question there. We have an email from Norma in Madison. My mother has macular degeneration, and a tablet computer would never work for her because by the time the words were large enough, there would only be room for a couple of words on that small of a screen. It would take too long to actually read anything, and it's just too easy to lose your place. I would recommend the person try a larger laptop with a 17-inch or so screen. And frankly, when I mentioned iPad, the reason I mentioned it was because somebody else who had a vision problem had called and said that they were using it and to some good effect. So I think it depends on the.
Yeah, you know, it's
how,
like a lot of
how
things,
bad the vision problem
yeah,
is.
And I think you know what's nice about the fact that you can go to a store and they have these different products
yeah,
is you can
yeah.
test them out side by side. So while a tablet might work for somebody, you know, 17-inch laptop might work better. The upside to the tablet is the fact that it's light. The downside
yeah.
to the laptop is
yeah.
it's going to be more cumbersome and more
yeah.
more likely, you know, you're going to be sitting in a chair using it versus, you know,
yeah.
sitting back and relaxing a little bit more with a tablet.
Email from Stephen, Milwaukee. 2 years ago, CA Antivirus, or Computer Associates Antivirus, was installed on a new laptop. Later, we were able to have this antivirus program to use for free, included with the Roadrunner cable broadband. Now, every day, there's an aggravating notification that pops up demanding repurchase of CA because it's expired. The usual uninstall efforts have not worked to stop this harassment. CA Tech Services have been unable to help. What do you suggest? Would one of the registry cleaner programs work, or software available from thecrapifier.com?
Yeah, it might be. Well, it's something that's probably in your startup. So, again, if you do the MSCONFIG, you know, on a Windows system and then hit, you know, run it or hit enter, and look at the startup tab, you're probably going to see the association in the checkbox is related to that program. And that's where you stop it from running in your when your computer starts up. And that's where the annoyance is coming from. And then the other thing is you can probably go into the program, if they still let you, and change the preferences so that it's no longer running in your startup. Mm. And then when you do a shutdown reboot, it should actually be removed. And then if you do an uninstall after it's no longer running, then you can do an uninstall either through the Windows control panel and add remove programs, or you could download and use something like CCleaner, which has an uninstall tool. And uninstall it through that, and then you could do a registry cleaner through CCleaner as well. And that would probably remove it. And then if none of that works, which I would be surprised that it didn't, you could go to that tips page at infostar.com. That very last tips will tell you what program it's, you know, it's actually running that in the event that it's hidden,
yeah,
you'll be able to find it. But I think it's probably in the startup.
Brian in Escanaba, Michigan. Hello to you.
Hello.
Hi.
Thanks for taking my call. I just had a comment on one of the previous callers called about his business computers, how he was able to only open up files, but wasn't able to access any programs in them.
Yeah.
I had a little trick, and it's not written down anywhere, but what I was able to do is when the computer would load, you'd have about like 2 seconds of time to access whatever you wanted before this program that started up when your computer started up started taking control of your computer. In those 2 seconds, I was able to access the malware bytes file, and I had to move my icons and move my mouse in the exact position that this icon would load up, so I knew exactly where to click real quick as soon as the computer would boot up, and was able to access the malware bytes, and the malware bytes actually took care of it, and then I was able to open up everything after that. It took me probably about an hour of getting things right, so I knew where to click to get this going. But
it worked.
Yeah, it did work. So hopefully, if he can get malware bytes somewhere. Well, and that was the other thing, is I didn't have malware bytes on my computer, so I had to download it on another computer, put it on a thumb drive, and then...
Yeah,
doing that process over and over and over to try to get malware bytes to install on my computer in that little 2 second window, but it installed and got it working. But it took care of it.
At least you persevered through it.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate the tip. That makes sense. You don't have very much time. You better be quick.
Yeah, sometimes you just got to keep going after it.
Rosie in Monroe, it's your turn. Hi, Rosie.
Hi. Suggestion for those people who had vision issues.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I have a computer that talks to me. It has no screen. Mm-hmm. It's I believe the website for it is humanware.com.
Okay, humanware.com?
I think so. That's... Nope, it's not telling me right now.
I can hear it, though.
I'm learning my way around it.
Yeah.
I've got all my favorite phone numbers in a folder. I've got a lot of things I can reference. There is a way to download books. I haven't figured it out yet, but it's coming.
Mm-hmm.
It does have internet access if you've got the right code for the computer in your house. Email, an address book.
Pretty much what you need.
Yeah, a lot of activities that you can do on it.
That's great.
And what's it called again? It's
I think the email or the website is humanware.com.
Oh, humanware.com.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yep. That's
more
great.
Good tips. Yeah, thanks, Rosie. Appreciate it very much. Viola in Shawano, it's your turn. Hi.
Hi there.
Hi.
It's a beautiful day here in Shawano.
Well, wonderful.
Yeah. I have a question about web TV. Is it still possible to use that?
Yes, it is. They sell, I believe there's a Google gadget for that, and there are a number of companies that sell, you know, and it, some of it depends on what your definition is of web TV.
Well, I bought this.
Are you talking? You're talking about the actual device that was called web TV.
Yes,
okay.
And you hook it up to your television.
Right. Yeah.
And,
boy, that
and
was.
You have a keyboard.
Yeah.
And I have one of those, and it's older.
Yeah.
And I was wondering if I could use that yet.
If it still works, you probably should be able to.
Well, why not?
Okay, how do I get in there to use that? Or would that come up on the screen?
Well, basically what it's doing is it's using your internet connection to allow you to use it on your TV.
Right.
So you've got to have that device hooked up to a router or a switch in your house. Or it's got to be, you know, plugged into your, you know, how you're getting your internet, whether it's cable or DSL.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
You know, that's how it would be. That's how it interfaces to the internet.
Okay, you couldn't use anything wireless.
Unless web TV has a wireless component to it. And that would probably come with the instructions, or you could probably take the model of it off of the back of your box, your web TV box, and do a search online and see what it tells you about the unit.
Okay.
Yep. There you go. Good luck. Thank you very much for calling.
You know, when she mentioned web TV, I was thinking, okay, there are Google devices. There are products out there that are sold that, quote unquote, do web TV, but I forgot there was actually a company
called
web TV. Yeah.
We have Mike in Green Bay with a question or comment. Hi, Mike.
Hi. I just have a question. Is there a way to bypass the Ethernet port for the internet? Because they're telling me the port on back of my computer is not functional.
We'll go to the basics. So, you know, everyone understands how things talk to each other. The internet is a network of computers. And the only way you can get on to the internet is through some kind of port access or IP address. And if it's wireless, your device is assigned an IP address, but it's wireless. So that wireless card or device in your computer or iPad or whatever is taking over being a physical port and being a virtual IP port. The hardwired one or the Ethernet port is your actual IP. It's assigned through that. So you can either disable it and put in another card, or you could take get a USB device and get another port into your system, or you can make it wireless if you have a wireless hookup. You don't want to go wireless without having a wireless router in your house. So in order to get onto the internet, you may have to add another card or pull out the existing card or disable that port in your system, add another card or add another Ethernet port through a USB port. So those are your options. But in order to be on the internet, you have to be identified as an IP. And whether it's wireless or hard, you need to do it that way. There's no way around that.
No way to get around that one.
Nope.
Thank you, Mike, for calling. Appreciate your call. Peter Green of InfoStar of Madison, our guest today, and talking with him, of course, about all things computer-related, including hardware and software. And he will be with us right up until 12:30 today here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Computers can be a tool or a toy or sometimes both at the same time, but however we use them, it can be hard to keep up with the latest news and the product releases. And maybe you feel like you're keeping up with the new developments, or maybe you're worrying that you might be missing out on some helpful improvements. Well, Peter Green's here to help. I'm Larry Mueller. Thank you so much for listening on the Ideas Network. Peter is with InfoStar.com, here to answer your questions until 12:30 today, all things computer hardware and software. And I hope you'll join in the conversation. You can reach us in a couple different ways, three actually. You can call us at 1-800-642-1234. You can also email us at talk@wpr.org. And don't forget our Facebook page. Visit that. Go to the Larry Mueller Show. And while you're there, like it, and we'll send you regular updates on upcoming show topics. Stay tuned. Back after the news. Taking a look at your personal computer today with Peter Green of InfoStar of Madison. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Thank you so much for listening in today. Appreciate it very much. Every one of our lines is filled right now, so we will probably just go to the lines in a few minutes. But first, this time of the program, we always like to take a look at what's out there and online. And Pete's got a top 10 list for us every month. And what have you got for us this month, Pete?
Got the next top 10. And what I do is I actually screen these and try to not duplicate stuff that I've done over the years. So these are all brand new ones. If you go to InfoStar.com, click on Current or the Top 10 Archives, and then scroll to today's date, they're all there. First one is called ActiveRain.com, and it's a large online real estate network. So if you're trying to buy or sell real estate, this might be a resource that might come in handy. Number two is an online resource where buyers and sellers of a wide variety of products and services come together, and it's called BuyerZone.com. Number three, if you're looking for a source for information, news, tricks, whatever is related to iPods, iPads, iPhone, it's called iSource.com. If you have a need of a free press release service, number four is PRLOG, PRLOG.org. And that might come in handy for you. Number five, I actually tested this, and because I was getting called by a number on my cell phone, and I was like, who is this? I don't recognize it. And I went online to this resource. It's called truecaller.com, and told me it was a telemarketer.
Ah.
So it was already, you know, listed up there. So truecaller.com, and you might find it handy. Number six, this is another one where you get an email in your box, and it's telling you about this great newsletter that's got the next great stock investment. Is it true? What's going on with it? How long has it been out there? Stockgumshoe.com is a free source that might tell you the answer.
Might help you out.
Yep. Number seven, Fantasy Sports Resource covers drafts, news, projections, trade analyzer, Roto World. I don't know where they came up with the name. I don't even know the association of that name. ROTO World NFL.com
no.
with sports, but that's what it's called. Number eight is a car research resource for new and used cars, industry news, and so forth, called ZAutos.com. And number nine, actually founded in Paris in 2004, and then they came out with an English version in 2007, but it's a technology review site, and it's called digitalversus.com. And the last one, and I don't know if you've even mentioned this on the air before with all your energy shows that you've done, but it's called greenmaxhome.com.
I don't think so.
But it's so it's GreenMax Home. It's a resource that's actually posted by WPPI Energy for Wisconsin, Upper Michigan, and Iowa to encourage homeowners that build and remodel to use reliable, sustainable energy systems.
And so there you have it.
That's it.
And they're all available at Infostar.com.
Yep.
And Julia in Mondovi has a question for you, so we're going to go right there. Hi, Julia.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Hi.
I have an older computer. It's a Sony Vario, It's an Intel Pentium 4, 1.5 gigahertz. It's small. It has just 128 hard drive. So I'm just wondering, I have XP Professional on. I've had it on there for years.
Yep.
But I haven't done the updates because we've been traveling and doing different things. And my Norton has expired, but I'd like to get a different antivirus and firewall on there, or some also for spyware.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that it's, you know, so I don't know exactly what protection I should be having for going on the Internet, but I do also want to know how to, what I should do to clear off, like, you know, files like from catalog shopping. That's because my computer has gotten very slow. And I know you said something about MS Config or something. How did you do that? I only caught the tail.
Yeah, and in XP Pro, if you click on Run and then type in MS Config,
okay.
So it's short for Microsoft Configuration, so MSConfig,
okay.
And then hit Enter, you'll see the Startup tab. The important thing is to just write down what you see the check, but you know, you have all these check boxes and they're checked off, which means that they're enabled.
Okay.
So if you disable ones and you actually find that you're missing something that you liked, you know, you should just write down, it's like a trial and error where you turn them off, and then when you save it, you'll have to exit and reboot your system to see what kind of effect it's had on it. So that's one way to get rid of a lot of those icons that are running in your lower right-hand, what they call system tray.
Okay.
The other thing in terms of cleaning up your system, the utility C-Cleaner, so it's from Piriforms, which is spelled P-I-R-I-F-O-R-M-S. So, or I'm not sure if there's an S after that. But
Piriform,
if
it, isn't it?
Yeah, might be Piriform. But it's C and then Cleaner. Will work well to get rid of a lot of temporary files and clean up some bad links to your in your system registry. And you know, if you decide to remove some programs, sometimes some of the links still linger. So that's why people use a system registry, and it cleans it up, and the computer doesn't spend excess time trying to think about why something isn't working, why it can't hook up or run an application that it says it needs to because it's no longer there. Because some of the uninstalls aren't programmed correctly. As far as Norton expiring, there are a number of free antivirus programs out there that also include malware, spyware. AVAST is one. That has a free version. AVG is another free version. Trend Micro, I believe, is another company, puts out House Call. I've got a link to a whole bunch of them. My InfoStar Virus Info Center page, if you look for AV Help, there's a whole bunch of links there.
And you can have
middle.
More than one on. I mean, put a couple on.
Oh, there's a whole, yeah. You could probably run a couple of them. Malware Bytes would be another one that more focuses on spyware and what they call malware.
Mm-hmm.
So that's another one you could download. And then I would also recommend, probably if you haven't, you should at least have a couple of browsers. So if you use Internet Explorer, you can use to run updates with Microsoft, but you probably want to download something like Firefox or Mozilla or Google Chrome, so at least you have an alternative to browse the web and, and check and make sure everything's working fine.
There you go. Thank you very much for calling, Julia.
And one other comment.
Yeah.
You know, those systems with Windows XP Pro, a lot of systems are still very useful. If you haven't maximized the amount of memory that you can put in those computers, whether it's a laptop or desktop, highly recommend it. So if your laptop can support 2 gigs of memory or 4 gigs of memory, memory is pretty inexpensive. Just make sure, you know, you're getting the right stuff for your system. There are utilities out there that you can run, or go to like Kingston Memory or PNY.com or Crucial.com. They have resources that tell you what kind of memory works for your computer. But it really helps. They really like having that extra memory above 512 the 1 gig range.
Mary and Nina, we turn to you now. Hi, Mary.
Hi. I'm so glad I got through.
Well, glad to have you along here. What's on your mind?
Well, I can get no audio from my laptop.
Well, that's no good.
No, that's not good. And so I don't know what to do with it. I've tried rebooting it, you know, and it just seems like it's stuck. It has told me that there is no audio program installed on this. And I know yesterday I had audio, and today I don't.
Oh.
Okay. One of the things you can do if you have online access?
Yes.
Okay. If you do a search for Microsoft Fix-It.
Okay.
And I actually linked to it. If you go to the Infostar.com Virus Info Center page.
Okay, let's go back.
But it's called, or you do a search for Microsoft and then Fix It, F-I-X-I-T.
Okay.
At least that's what I called it for a shortcut on my system, and I think that's probably what it is. But what they'll do is they'll do a scan of your system based on what you're telling them is wrong with your system.
Okay.
And you'll identify the operating system, which version and what your problem is, and it'll do a scan and do a recommended solution.
Oh, okay.
So it'll interact.
That's nice.
So it'll interact with your system to do that. But in the event that it's not called Microsoft Fix-It, you can go, if you go to Infostar.com, click on the Virus Info Center page, and then scroll down to where it says XP.
Yeah.
It's the very first bracketed link.
Okay.
And see if that works for you.
Okay. There you go.
I will give it a try. Thank you very much.
Yep. Thanks, Mary.
Good luck.
Bob in Lindenhurst.
And one other thing.
Yep.
It could be as simple as a plug not being plugged in, you know, something moved. Or it could be as simple as that you put it on mute without realizing that your sound is muted.
Yeah.
So those are two other little things to just check for.
Yeah, the mute.
Yeah.
That's a good idea. Bob in Lindenhurst, Illinois, it is your turn. Hi, Bob.
Hello, thank you very much. I run a Microsoft Access database.
Okay.
It needs to run on both Office 2002 and 2010. I have a form that uses a calendar where you can click on the date that you want.
Yeah.
I used the calendar function in 2002, and that works fine, but it was not migrated to 2010.
Okay.
They use something called DateTick, which works on 2010, but not 2002.
Okay.
So I'm looking for some solution that can work on both Office products.
Boy, I think you got to just make the move forward. Trying to be backward compatible can get you in trouble.
I don't have that option.
Why don't you have the option?
Well, because the people that are running the 2002, I don't control what they run.
Oh. So you have to be dealing with people running 2002.
Yeah, all the places that I know that run Access, usually you move forward and trying to still hook up to or be compatible with prior versions just runs into trouble.
Okay, forms application that somebody has created that would just be a normal form that would work in either one of them.
Yeah, you could try and you can try and research it online. It would be the best thing is Microsoft's got a knowledge base and a TechNet site is to try and search their databases and see, you know, there might be some, they call them Microsoft Most Valuable Professionals that specialize in access. And
They'll have something.
They might have something, but you'll have to do some research and homework on that.
Good luck. Thanks for calling. Got an email from Debbie. Just purchased a Toshiba tablet. Do you have to run an antivirus program on it? It runs the Android programs.
From what I know about the Android operating system, and what I've been told, is it is not a secure lockdown operating system. And if there is something available for it, I would probably research it and get it just to make sure.
Okay.
That's one of the shortcomings, unless it's changed, you know, and I'm sure it's, hopefully it's going to change over time. You know, Google purchased the company that makes the Android operating system. So Google owns that. And I know prior versions, and I don't know the latest release, is just not as secure as something like Apple's OS for tablet devices or iPhones and so forth. So you might want to look into it.
A Facebook question from Kathy. I downloaded Mac Keeper on my iMac. Was this a good idea or not really necessary?
I'm not sure what Mac Keeper does. Do you know, Larry?
No, I don't.
I've never heard of it.
It's probably, well, I don't know. I don't want to say. So I guess we're at a loss there. Let's see. Walt emailed us and says, I had a video driver which was corrupted. I downloaded to the desktop and installed a new driver successfully. Now I can't delete the folder with the updated driver. Windows 7 says I need permissions. I'm signed on as an administrator, or signed in as one. Any ideas?
Not allowing you to delete a folder. You could right mouse click on the folder and see what the permission settings are. There might be something that you can change there to actually remove it for some reason. If you're the administrator of the system, when you're logged in, you should be able to go onto that folder, right mouse click it, and then change the permission so that you can actually delete it. It might be set up so that it's sort of read only for some reason.
Oh. We had a listener suggested that to block pop-ups, use Firefox for the browser and install two add-ons. One is called NoScript, and the other is called Ghostery, which is like ghost, Ghostery.
I love these names.
Yeah, NoScript and the other Ghostery pretty much eliminates all pop-ups. Also add-on for Firefox, AdBlocker Plus. As well, AdBlocker Plus is another.
Sounds like that person was very active in wanting to eliminate block pop-ups.
Yes, indeed. Mike in Milwaukee, it's your turn. Hi, Mike.
Morning. I have a question about memory upgrades. You had mentioned it just a little bit earlier.
Yeah.
And just had a question about how much is enough and when you should stop. I have a fairly new HP Pavilion laptop. It's running an A4 Vision chip, dual-core chip. It came with 4 gigabytes memory. I could upgrade it to 8. And I had thought about it, but I wonder, is 4 enough? Will 8 help? Is it overkill?
Well, that's a good question. I take it you're running Windows 7?
Yes, I am.
Okay, do you know which version of Windows 7 you're using?
The home premium.
Okay, is it the 64-bit or 32?
64.
Okay, the 64, you can actually upgrade it and will take advantage of the extra memory.
Mm-hmm.
If you had the 32-bit version,
wouldn't work.
It wouldn't work.
Mm-hmm.
It would only continue. It would only continue. It would work, but it would only continue to see only the four that was installed. It wouldn't, even if you bought the extra, it wouldn't matter because the operating system wouldn't know how to use it.
Right. Is it worth the extra money to upgrade? Would I gain something with the? My last computer had two, and now I think, well, I've got four. That should be enough. And
it depends on what you use it for. What do you?
Mostly just surfing the web and video and stuff like that.
When you say video?
Netflix and stuff, streaming HD videos and stuff.
You'll probably see some improvement in buffering and, you know, I don't know if your system lags at all, you know, when you're doing that with the video. If it isn't, you're probably fine, but memory right now is pretty inexpensive. I don't know what it would be for your system, but I've seen some pretty crazy prices on, you know, new systems where, you know, you have 8 and 16 gigs of memory for, like, you know, $50 to $75. So now might be the right time to just actually just do it and be done with it.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
Thanks
but
much.
But, you know, as far as what you're doing with the video and if you're not seeing any lag, you're probably not going to get that much improvement in performance if it's working fine now.
Thanks again for calling. Jack emailed and wondered what you'd recommend for a new desktop PC. Current desktop 7 years old and serviceable, but would like to upgrade. I know that what is recommended today may be too little a month from now, maybe. How much memory, disk space, chip, any other?
You know, someone asked me that about 2 weeks ago, and I basically sent him, a friend of mine, an email with the resources that I posted online.
Wow.
What I do when I look at purchasing a system, and it's not to break the bank, but, you know, if you want to break the bank, you go to this the resource I posted for comparing AMD versus Intel and where they fit on a chart of CPU performance. So I've got a link to that at the very top of tip number 22 at infostar.com. So you go to that and you go, okay, they put a wholesale price on what the CPU is. So you look at that and you look at the price versus performance, how much you're willing to invest. So like for now, let's say like an AMD Phenom running 1090 CPU, the numbers that they use, 1090T versus an Intel i7 core. I think it's like an 875K or whatever they use. You know, you can look at the chart and you see roughly that CPU cost is somewhere around $200. And then you build your system around that. And to me, I've used a lot of eBay sellers that have very high ratings. What's a high rating? Their feedback is pretty close to 100%. And they have systems out there where, you know, you can start with 4 gigs of memory. You can have 8 or 12 or 16. Depends upon, you know, the board that you get, because the board is what supports that extra memory. And then the operating system. So like we mentioned before, the 64-bit version supports everything above 4 gig. If you get the 32-bit version, then you're locked at the 4. So to me, if you're going to buy more memory, you go to the 64-bit version. Then hard drive, I would say nothing less than a terabyte if you're getting a spinning hard drive. But again, depends on what you're using the system for. If you need more storage versus less, or are you just really using it for looking at some pictures, email, web browsing, some word processing, and some accounting, you could probably get by with, you know, like a 160 or 200 solid state hard drive that's, you know, $150, $200. The video card, do you do gaming? You know, what are you doing with that? Maybe you don't really need a killer video card. So, you know, that's going to be $25, maybe $50. And then, you know, you've got the case of the system, you know. So you could probably get a great system for roughly $500, $600 customized.
Yeah.
Or you go to the store and see, you know, what their options are online. You've got all the resources there, and then you've got reviews. People give you all the feedback. So
there you go. Pete, thanks.
Yep.
You'll Always be back great. First Monday of next month.
Yep, after Black Friday.
Peter Green of Infostar.com, our guest. He'll be back, I am sure. Thank you for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network.